Thank you for helping us make Budget again last year. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 4 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, thanks for your financial support, and we're looking forward to partnering with you again in 2012. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, issues, etc., and sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
I'm just very thankful for the platform that God has given me and the opportunity to be a quarterback for, you know, the Denver Broncos. What a great organization.
This administration's war on religion is what bothers me greatly.
All we're really seeing here right now is a very modest attempt from the Obama administration to put some controls on how some government money is spent when it flows to religious organizations.
When Massachusetts drives Catholic adoption services out of the state, there's something fundamentally violating religious liberty.
And when we worship, we're receiving things from him. It might seem like a kind of a selfishness or an arrogance to Rick Warren, but it's exactly how the Bible gives it to us. God is the giver, and we are on the receiving end of his gift.
Indiana truck drivers, rubbish, etc.
Is it simply too much? I mean, are we asking in Texas abortionists to do something fundamentally against their nature, their calling as abortionists, if you will? In Texas, it has been upheld by the court that an abortionist, before performing the abortion, must show the mother the sonogram image of the unborn child. Is that too much? We're going to be talking about that decision and another in Iowa and Florida with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse here on this Tuesday afternoon, January the 10th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We are coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon. A little bit later, in fact, in just about 10 minutes, we're going to open up the lines and ask you to listen briefly with us to some audio from Oprah Winfrey's brand new show on her own network. It's called, Next Step, something like that, with Oprah Winfrey. And she could have had, she is huge, isn't she? I mean, she is just at the top of her game in terms of broadcasting. She can have anyone sit on the couch across from her that she wants. Presidents, movie stars, celebrities. And for her very first new show back this weekend, she chose Joel Osteen. We'll play some of the audio, and we'll see what you think about this conversation between Oprah and Osteen during some open lines, issues, etc. 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address at issuesetc. Or you can leave your reaction to the Oprah Osteen conversation at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Down in Texas, that's my home state. They tend to be pretty sensible about these things. But are they asking the abortionists to advocate for the unborn, to basically take a pro-life position in requiring him or her to show the mother the sonograms before the abortion?
Well, I don't know. This may be out of the person's nature as an abortionist, but it's certainly consistent with their mission as a doctor to show the image of what's really there. You know, in other words, a woman who's going to have an abortion has a baby in her womb, and this law is basically requiring that everybody face that before they do anything. So if the Hippocratic Oath says, first, do no harm, it seems to me perfectly consistent with the calling as a physician to be required to give this full, vivid information of the viewing of the sonogram.
The key issue here seems to be informed consent.
Yes.
Talk about these
kind of cases, go around and around over the question of what counts as informed consent, what counts as accurate information, and so on. And so that's how you can tell that this isn't about science at all, but it's about political ideology. You know, I mean, the fact is, it's not like they're asking the doctor to show the woman a photoshopped picture. They're asking the doctor to show her what's really there, you know. And so it is about truth, right? The truth is being revealed to her. And some people on the other side don't like that truth, and they understand that her seeing that truth, viewing the baby in her womb, will change her position or is likely to have an impact on whether she wants to go through with the abortion or not. So, you know, it's not about truth or science. It's about ideology from their point of view. And that's why I think this kind of legislation is actually extremely important and very beneficial. I mean, if the Supreme Court is going to force us to permit abortion, the very least they can do is to allow us to show what abortion actually is. And that's what this informed consent law in Texas is doing.
Is it, I mean, this sounds so grisly and gruesome, but is the opposition to this what sounds to me to be just a very sensible precaution prior to any kind of procedure, fully informed consent before you subject yourself to it? Is the opposition to this really based upon the fact that it may actually change some women's minds?
I think it's deeper than that, Todd, actually. You know, in other words, if let's say you're working for Planned Parenthood. The odds are that maybe you've had an abortion yourself, right? If you're a big abortion advocate, you may have had an abortion or two yourself. And so it isn't just what that woman in Texas is doing when she's laying there on the gurney. It's also a kind of implicit affirmation of you and your position, you and your beliefs. And so the person who's had an abortion or two may already be in a position where she has to kind of rationalize and justify what she did. And so somebody who chooses life is a kind of affront to her. And I think that everybody going into the whole Roe v. Wade regime, nobody fully anticipated how people's behavior and thinking would be changed by the experience of going through an abortion. Because once you've done something like that, you have to tell yourself that it was okay. I mean, I think the most natural thing is for people to say, well, it was okay. You know, yeah, I didn't think I would want it, but yeah, I had to do it. And so you start telling yourself this, and you start going more deeply into the rationalization. And you start to become kind of desperate. And I think, honestly, if you look at the rhetoric of the pro-choice people, quite often their rhetoric has this kind of desperate quality to it that isn't really connected to the reality of what's going on. You know, look, why should the Planned Parenthood ladies care if some lady in Texas gets informed consent and looks at the sonogram? Why should they care? You know, I think it's cutting into something that's deeper in the psyche than anybody has really fully anticipated or talked about in a clear way.
In another state, on another subject, tell us a little bit about the story involving lesbian mothers and their parental rights in Iowa.
Well, let's see. There were two stories that came across my desk in the last week. One was in Iowa, and one was in Florida. And the one in Iowa was two women who are in a same-sex so-called marriage there in Iowa, which is legal in Iowa. And one of them had a baby, and they went to the court and said they want both of the women's name on the birth certificate, and they want them both registered as legal parents. And the courts had initially said, no, we're not going to do this, because according to Iowa law, I hope I'm not confusing these cases. According to Iowa law, the second parent of the child is not just the spouse, but the child's father. The statute, that's what it is. The statute is written in a gender-based way, so that the mother's husband is automatically the father of the child. And so since it said father, the state of Iowa looked at that and said, well, you know, golly gee whiz, this other lady isn't the father, and it's a biological impossibility for her to be the father. And that was thrown out in favor of a gender-neutral reading of that statute, which says that these two women are both the parents, the legal parents of the child. So mother and father is kind of out, and now the legal parent idea has taken hold there, which is exactly what I've been predicting since 2008. That's what has to happen. If you legalize same-sex so-called marriage, what you have to do is redefine parenthood from being a biological reality to being something that's simply legally created. And so that happened in that particular case in Iowa. The two women were on the same page and wanted this to happen. Case in Florida, this is why I'm getting a little confused, there's another case in the same week in Florida that had to do with two women who had had a child together, but they had the child together in a very different way. And, of course, same-sex marriage is not legal in Florida. One of these women donated the egg, and the other woman was the gestational mother. So we have a genetic mother, and we have a gestational mother. And, you know, not too surprisingly, this relationship broke up after a few years. The gestational mother considers herself the mother. She zipped off with the child and, you know, went somewhere with them and didn't come back. And so now the other mother, the one who has the genetic connection with the child, is suing and trying to, you know, trying to have joint custody and so on. And so in that case, the first ruling, the first judge said basically with tears in his eyes, you know, the law says that the woman who gives birth to the child is the child's mother, and so this other person isn't the mother. That person, you know, which is what the law has always been, right? but now the second court, the on appeal, they overturned that and said, no, they're both the mothers, they both count as the mothers, and so they should have shared custody like any other disputing, separating couple. And, of course, lost in all of this is the fact that the child's father was safely escorted off the stage before any of this drama ever took place. And so I posted all of this over at the Ruth blog and talked about it a little bit, Todd, because it seems to me that it simply isn't possible for justice to be done in these kinds of cases. You know, these cases are so complex. And what the courts are trying to do is to give the adults what they want, but they're not really thinking about what the child needs, which is the child needs some kind of identity connection with their genetic heritage, as well as with the people who brought them into being, people who take care of them, so on and so forth. So it's too complicated to really do justice, and that's what these courts are banging their heads against a wall about, trying to figure out what are they going to do with these cases. Anyway, there's a lot going on there, but I would really encourage your readers to go and look at that, look at these cases, because this is where the brave new world is taking us.
Folks, you can stay informed in 2012 on the important cultural issues. Check out the website for Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse and the Ruth Institute. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for the Ruth Institute. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Thanks again, Jennifer.
You're welcome, Todd.
When we come back, it's Oprah and Osteen sitting down together. We have the audio, and we'll get your reaction. Stay tuned. Open Lines next.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Imagine SteadfastLutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub, your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm, so check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
If any former evangelicals are hearing me speak right now, I want to assure you, you don't have to be a homeless Christian. If you would go to issuesetc.org, look on their website, you'll find a list of churches. Find one close to you and attend that church. There, You can receive the true gospel. You don't have to be a homeless Christian, and they will not call you a backslider.
To find a church near you, go to issuesetc.org and click Find a Church.